So happy to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller, glad to have you along today as we spend our program talking about health issues. And to begin, we're going to take a look at alternative medicine with Christine Larson of Lexington, Kentucky. Christine is an adjunct faculty member with the University of Kentucky system. She's completing her doctoral work in evidence-based medicine, and she is the author of the book we're going to be talking about today. It's titled Alternative Medicine, and it's published by Greenwood Press as part of a series on health and medical issues that we face today in this country. So we're really pleased to have her on by phone, and certainly if you would like to join in, feel free at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Give us a call. And Christine Larson,
yes.
Welcome to the show. Thanks for being with us today.
Well, thanks for having me, Larry.
You know, I didn't realize that I was participating in alternative medicine. As I think you define it, you define taking vitamins or prayer or exercising as a kind of all as alternative medicines.
That's correct. In the book, I've used the categories as established by the National Center for Complementary and Alternative Medicine in Washington. They're an offshoot of the National Institutes of Health, and I use their six categories. And I think most people would probably be surprised to know that they're practicing alternative medicine.
I think so. And it does seem to cause some confusion among people, does it not?
Well, it causes a great deal of confusion. One of the things with alternative medicine is many people get alternative medicine confused with integrative medicine, and then they wonder if it's the same as holistic health. They wonder how it differs from conventional medicine, and that was one of the reasons that the book was written, is to really bring clarity to those issues.
Now, you mentioned integrative medicine, and probably people are wondering what is integrative medicine?
Well, integrative medicine is basically a blend of both conventional and alternative. Alternative and complementary medicine, you'll frequently see the acronym of CAM. They're called CAM therapies,
mm-hmm.
Complementary and alternative medicine. And basically, they differ from integrative medicine in that with integrative medicine, a patient may be seeing a doctor and taking an antihypertensive agent for high blood pressure.
Okay.
The doctor may also recommend that they start exercising.
Mm-hmm.
That would be an example of integrative medicine.
And so that's probably pretty common among people in this country, integrative medicine, I would assume.
Certainly.
Yeah.
Certainly.
Are there practices? Do they work? Are they safe?
Well, those are excellent questions. And I bring out some of the critical issues regarding safety and efficacy because essentially when you're talking about a healing mechanism, the key questions are, does it work? Is it safe? And those are issues that I go into in great depth. What I have attempted to do through the book is look at both sides of the issue. On the complementary and alternative side, I've selected the most reputable practitioners and research, the science, and then on the conventional side, I've done the same thing. And the issues of safety and efficacy are covered throughout the book, and there are a lot of legitimate concerns in the medical literature regarding safety and efficacy, and combination therapies is another issue that consumers need to be very aware of.
Could you give us an example of where there is concern?
Well, one of the concerns, for example, I cite research in the book that's published in a lot of the peer-reviewed journals that indicate that combination therapies, for example, consumers may be taking complementary and alternative therapies and not realize that there may be an interactive effect with pharmaceuticals,
mm-hmm.
and that can be very dangerous. So those issues, I think, are very legitimate, and consumers need to be aware of those.
And as we look at alternative medicine, should parts of that be regulated by the government?
Well, those are excellent questions, and some of those issues are covered in the book. The issue really boils down to when you're looking at it from a legal standpoint or a medical standpoint, basically the regulation by the government should ensure that the product is effective, number one, but also safe for consumers.
Yeah.
And the issue of FDA regulation of prescription drugs, for example, as I mentioned in the book, because a drug is FDA approved does not necessarily mean that it's safe and effective for the entire population.
Yeah, for me individually.
Exactly. And nor does the reverse of that, is that the case. In other words, because a CAM therapy is not approved or does not have the science, that doesn't necessarily mean it's not effective.
Yeah.
So the issues are really more complex than what appears on the surface. And I give the example because I think it was well covered in the media. But the case of Vioxx, for example, The Vioxx made it through the FDA regulatory process, but the cardiac effects were illustrated in early clinical trials. And as a result of the study being, the data being proprietary, the senior researcher was not allowed to release that information. And as a result, it made it through the regulatory hoops and was released onto the market, and then the cardiac effects manifested themselves, and there was a sudden spike in cardiac death. So that gives you a sense of, you know, some of the complexities of the issues. They're much more complex than what appears on the surface.
And, you know, I'd like to go back, sort of back up just a little bit and go back to your book in terms of its overall structure and what you're trying to accomplish in that. Can we go back through that, Christine?
Certainly. One of the things in writing a book on alternative medicine, there are 4,000-plus books written on the subject. And what I've attempted to do is stick to the science, because I believe that that's the most legitimate when you're providing information for consumers. And in doing the research for the book, it was interesting because one of the major criticisms of CAM therapies are that they haven't been proven scientifically. And so if you look at science as kind of the critical component, and by that, when I use the word science, what science means is that we do have the data that shows that a product either does work or does not work. We have statistics that support that. And if we look at conventional medicine, we have to look at the science that supports that. And this may come as a big surprise to readers that roughly 20 to 50% of medicine is science-based, and that's conventional medicine.
Where I think the average person would think probably closer to 90 to 100%.
Exactly. And what that means, I think it will surprise most people, but what it means is essentially we have the data that shows in 20 to 50% of medicine the scientific basis for it. But the flip side of that, of course, is that in 50 to 80%, we simply don't have the science. So I think if we're looking at different forms of healing mechanisms and pathways, and if we're overly critical on the CAM therapy side because it doesn't have good science, we also have to hold that same measuring stick up to the conventional medicine and say, okay, now if we're talking about science and statistically based analysis, then we have to measure both sides from the same benchmark, and then we get a more accurate picture of what we're dealing with.
Yeah. Well, we have some callers who want to visit with you. We can talk some more about the book, of course. But if you'd like to join in, by the way, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Mark in Racine, we'll give you a chance. Thanks for waiting. Hi.
Hi. I have a question and a suggestion, actually. More and more people are getting older, and they are winding up taking more and more medications from more and more specialists.
Yes.
And there really ought to perhaps be a medical specialty of somebody who is going to act as sort of the medical general practitioner who is going to observe and make sure that everything's working together.
Right. And you bring up an excellent point. Something that I cover in the book, and one of the concerns, the data from the Institute of Medicine, they produced two excellent reports. And for consumers that aren't aware of who the Institute of Medicine is, They are essentially a medical think tank in Washington, D.C. that produces very quality work. And they produced two reports, Crossing the Quality Chasm and To Err is Human. And in those reports, they indicated that the fourth leading cause of death in the U.S. is medical errors. And a big percentage of that is related to prescription drug usage, errors in prescription drug usage. And with respect to the elderly, you bring up an excellent point, because many elderly individuals may be seeing a number of physicians, generalists, specialists, and each of those physicians may have written three or four prescriptions for the patient. And then if you combine that, many elderly individuals are taking multiple prescriptions. And the combined effects of those drugs can have some, can be of a concern. Something that I outline in the book that I believe will be very helpful for patients is David Eisenberg produced a very fine piece of research called Advising Patients That Take Complementary and Alternative Medicine. And he put together a 9-point plan for doctors to assist them in working with patients and to work toward a good health outcome. One of the things that was I felt necessary when I read that was patients need a type of patient guide to working with their doctor. So I've put together a corollary, a 9-point patient guide that they can use when they work with their doctor to work toward the best possible health outcome.
I think that a pharmacist can be very useful in this, too. I think people really ought to avail themselves of the knowledge that the pharmacists have, because oftentimes, you know, doctors in their particular specialties really aren't aware of the interactions with other drugs that people might be taking, and it can lead to dangerous situations.
Yes, and you bring up a good point. Pharmacists have an excellent knowledge base, and I would encourage consumers to avail themselves of their local pharmacists and ask questions, because they're very knowledgeable and they can be of great assistance in guiding particularly elderly patients that are on multiple medications.
Yeah. Mark, thanks.
You're welcome.
Yeah, appreciate the call very much. Christine Larson is our guest today, author of Alternative Medicine. It's published by Greenwood Press as part of a series on health and medical issues that we face today. Pleased to have her with us, and certainly if you want to join in with your own question or comment, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Or in Madison at 263-1890. I'm Larry Mueller, Jim Packard, our producer, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking about alternative medicine today with Christine Larson, who is an adjunct faculty member with the University of Kentucky system, completing her doctoral work in evidence-based medicine, and the author of the book, Alternative Medicine. Certainly, if you'd like to join in, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Or in Madison at 263-1890. I'll give a call and we'd be happy to get you on the line. And before we go back to the phones, let's talk a little bit more about why consumers seek alternative treatments.
Well, and that's a very good question, Larry. I think one of the primary reasons is what they're currently doing isn't working. It gets to be a very pragmatic issue. They may be dissatisfied with their current state of health. They may have read literature that talks about CAM therapies. Friends, colleagues may have used CAM therapies and had a good outcome. So all of those reasons contribute to individuals wanting to explore CAM therapies. And some of the statistics I include in the book that the consumers spent, the most recent data indicates that consumers spent upwards of $47 billion each year on complementary and alternative medicine. So it's very much a growth industry.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
Betty and Franklin, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Betty.
Hi. Hi, Betty.
Hi. I'm into this stuff a fair amount, and I was prescribed red rice yeast for blood pressure, and I want to, I'm sorry, for cholesterol reduction of the problems, and I'm wondering about blood sugar effects with that. And number two, is anyone putting any money and efforts into researching the herbs? Because that's always the complaint, that there's no real data. Mm-hmm. And I will hang up and listen.
All right. Thank you for calling, Betty.
One of the things, the cautions, I do not give medical advice. The book really doesn't get into specifics about, you know, what treatments for what conditions. It speaks more on a broader scale. To answer your question on research and funding for complementary and alternative medicine, the National Center on Complementary and Alternative Medicine in Washington, which is a part of the National Institutes of Health, have a number of clinical trials, evaluations going on nationwide in a variety of areas. So, yes, there is funding going into the evaluation of CAM therapies. And many of the therapies are, in fact, when the science, when they're put to the scientific test, are proving to be beneficial. So I think the important thing is to make sure that we do have good science. And then when we don't have good science, and this is something I mentioned in the regarding the book, that, you know, the book really introduces evidence-based medicine to the American consumer. And but it also provides consumers issues to consider in the absence of science. And whether we're dealing with conventional medicine, where we have 20 to 50% of it based on science, or CAM therapies, where we have less than that based on science, I think a rule of thumb that would be wise is when we're not certain, then you proceed with caution.
I think that's probably good advice. Red rice yeast, just as an aside, contains a statin drug. Lovastatin, which is maybe why it reduces cholesterol levels,
right.
But it's also an unregulated dietary supplement. So,
right,
a person needs to be careful.
Yes, and I think one of the things that is underscored throughout the book is the importance of nutrition and the importance of exercise. And just to share with you a little bit about how I became interested in evidence-based medicine. Several years ago, I had a health problem and underwent two surgical procedures for correction of that problem, and postoperatively, my health declined. And I gained 20 pounds, developed high blood pressure, high cholesterol,
boy,
was pre-diabetic, and then the thyroid problem was diagnosed. I was diagnosed as thyroid toxicosis unspecified. Thyroidectomy was recommended with radiation. And I sensed at that point, because the diagnoses I was getting from, I would get a second opinion, and the second opinion would, it would not follow the first opinion. So my sense was that...
Nobody knew?
Well, and my sense, I didn't know the term at the time, but basically I sensed that we had run out of science.
Yeah.
In other words, the diagnoses were sometimes even conflicting. And I thought at that point that a surgical procedure, when things were very uncertain, did not appear to be wise. So at that point, I decided I would do my own research and see if I could come up with a simple solution. And fortunately, in my case, I did. I had simply become insulin resistant. And once I addressed that with dietary changes and vitamins, all of the health conditions were eliminated.
Wow.
And that had a powerful effect on me. And that really serves as the basis for my interest in evidence-based medicine, because my sense is that had I undergone that second surgical procedure, I had done the long-term outcomes research on thyroidectomies, and the long-term science was basically not there, and the science that was there indicated that there were complications. So I decided after that research that I would see if I could come up with a simple solution, and that ultimately was identification of insulin resistance as the problem. And then once I identified the problem, I corrected it through very simple means. And that really had a powerful effect on me.
You essentially took charge of your own health and health care.
Yes, I did.
Is that who bears the responsibility for health and health care?
Well, I think that is, you know, I think ultimately individuals bear the responsibility for their own health in large part. What we eat, how much we eat, if we exercise, how much we exercise. But I also think employers bear a responsibility. And then at a governmental level, for example, we have the Medicare. We care for the elderly. We care for the indigent with Medicaid. So I think there are multiple layers of responsibility or levels of responsibility. But I think one of the key issues in healthcare is to get consumers more engaged in their own healthcare and more active. Simple things with diet and exercise, I think those are critical.
Yeah. Christine Larson, our guest today, author of Alternative Medicine. If you want to chime in with your own questions or comments, feel free at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or in Madison, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and comments. Well, certainly as we look at healthcare today, the costs of healthcare are enormous, and a lot of people don't feel we're getting our money's worth based on what we spend.
Well, and one of the critical issues in healthcare is cost. And the McKinsey, the consulting firm McKinsey, had in a report this past week that by the year 2008, Fortune 500 firms will spend as much on healthcare costs on their current path as they generate in profit. And that's a concern. One of the reasons why I think we have the escalating cost of health care, well, there are two primary reasons, but the first is the lack of evidence-based medicine. If you're practicing and you only have 20 to 50% of that based on science, which means that you actually know and have proof that a given intervention works or doesn't, then when you go outside that, then logic says if we don't have science to guide us, then essentially it is a type of educated assumption
yeah.
that may or may not be correct. And if you multiply that by millions across the country, I think you get a sense of some of the costs and the outcomes. One of the studies I reference in the book is the World Health Report. And in the year 2000, they put 191 countries globally on the same measuring stick, and they looked at five separate indicators and then a cumulative score. And what they were looking at, Larry, was what did each country spend on health care, and then what did they get for those expenditures? And the U.S. at that point spent $1.4 trillion, and we were ranked 37th place in the category of the Dominican Republic. So that gives you a sense of, we're spending more, but what are we getting?
Just as an aside, do you recall who was ranked first or among the top?
The top countries, and the most recent, France, was number one in the most recent report. But a lot of the Scandinavian countries were in the top tier. Japan was in the top tier. Many of the industrialized nations were in the top tier. We were the only industrialized nation ranked...
out of that top tier?
Out of that top tier.
Yeah. Let's go to the phones again. Sherry in Pewaukee, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Sherry.
Hi.
Hi, Sherry.
Hi, Christine. I had a question. I have MS, and I have been trying different alternative medicine, but I've also done the conventional, and it seems like with the conventional, it's done nothing but put me backwards. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to locate or find any clinics or centers that do have alternative medicine, or I've heard about compound pharmacies or, you know, different homeopathic or holistic. Is there a site to try to find and locate something in my area?
Well, you can look in the book. I have a substantial reference section that has very good sources for scientific. In other words, when you're trying to learn about different arenas, and I think that will give you a good starting point. Another suggestion, I have a friend that has MS, and I know she works very closely with the National MS Organization, and often they will provide information for the patients that have that condition.
Okay.
So I would recommend you go through the MS site. I forget the name of the national organization, but I would assume that they keep a database on clinical trials that are being done across the country, experimental treatments, what they consider the state-of-the-art treatment for that particular condition. So I think that would be a good starting point.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thanks, Sherry. Good luck, Sherry.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Laura in Waukesha, we'll turn to you next. Laura, hello.
Hello. How are you doing?
Hi, Laura.
Nice to talk to you.
Thank you.
I wanted to, a while back, I discovered I had cysts on my thyroid, and I went to see an ear, nose, and throat doctor. And he said that they had to be removed, but that my thyroid was going to go with it. And I was like, oh, boy.
Uh-huh.
So I did some research and I on the Internet and so forth and discovered that sometimes people have problems with soy products.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, you know, consuming a lot of soy, drinking a lot of soy milk and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And the cyst kept getting larger, you know. And what in effect happened was I decided to eliminate the soy, and they gradually went away. And later I went to another doctor and described, you know, the situation. He said, well, they're not there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Wonderful.
And I thought, okay, so
you cured yourself.
I avoided surgery right there. And I'm thinking, you know, I know that, you know, soy is very promoted, you know, commercially and so forth, and it's not always good for everybody.
Right.
At least not in my case. I mean, it was actually shutting my thyroid down. It felt like, I mean, I was feeling very lethargic and
hypothyroidism.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, and the thyroid is, it's a very small organ, but it controls a good bit of our health. And when it's not functioning properly, it can impact us in a very significant way. One of the references, I talk a bit about my health condition and its resolution, but some of the references that I use in the book, there's an excellent book by Dr. Richard Shames. Richard and Carolee Shames have written a book called 10 Steps to Thyroid Health, and it's one of the best books out there on thyroid health, and I would recommend that you look into that and some of the other references that I cite in the book regarding the thyroid.
Yeah. Thanks, Laura.
Thank you.
Appreciate it very much. And we'll take another call. Bill in Wausau, your turn next. Hi, Bill.
Hi there.
Hi, Bill.
Great. Say, about this here machine analyzing. Now, I had an experience. I punctured the bottom of my foot one time. I kept it so it didn't infect, but it was always tender for a year later. So I decided to go to I'm not going to mention, and they put me on a machine, and then they injected me with something, and I swear I tasted burned flesh.
Hmm.
And I lost my temper, and I done away with the whole thing. And then I was complaining to a friend. He said, hey, I got a foot doctor you go to. Well, I went there, and I'm not exactly what you call very rich, so the office worker said $400. I said $400. All I got is $40. And the old doc, he says, no, that'll be $40.
Well, that doesn't always happen, Christine Larson.
No, that's a little bit rare. I hope your foot was cured.
He touched my foot and he said, well, what you did, You had damaged that big tendon under there. It's going to take time for it to straighten out and heal itself. They heal slow. That's all it was to it.
Right.
Right. Bill, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Bill.
David in Ironwood, Michigan. It's your turn next. Hi, David.
Hi, David.
I also heard that thing about France being number one in health, and not only that, but in health insurance, too. Everyone wants to copy Canada, or we should be copying France. Why go with the second highest cost insurance?
Well, I think a couple things when we're talking about health care costs. As I mentioned, making sure we have good science beneath what we do is critical. But I think another component of that is you can't really separate out the health of a population from the country itself and the culture itself. And in many respects, medicine is as much about culture as it is about science.
Hmm.
So on the consumer end, when we look at, consumer habits in terms of what we eat, amount of exercise we get, other countries, one of the reasons that France is scored so highly is their diet. Their diet is much more nutritious. They eat smaller portions. They don't have the sedentary lifestyle that many Americans do. They walk. They bicycle. So you have to, build those components in order to give a fair assessment of, what is France doing that where they score higher, and then the U.S. is spending more, but we're ranked lower. I think it's a combination of factors that comes into play.
Yeah, it probably. Thank you, David, for calling. Appreciate it. And if you'd like to join in, the number to call 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Give us a call as we talk with Christine Larson about her book, Alternative Medicine. In several chapters in your book, actually, you take a look at the controversies going on in the medical field in healthcare today. We've talked about costs and prescription drug use, ineffective prescription drug use leading to problems as well.
Right.
Are there other things that we should be thinking about in these areas?
Well, certainly. Obviously, the book has a central theme of consumers becoming more engaged in their own health and not looking to the healthcare system to do many things that they should be doing for themselves. I think that's a critical theme. Another issue that is brought up throughout is obviously medical research requires funding, and the funding that most of the medical research is funded through the National Institutes of Health, through the federal government. So researchers at NIH do need funding support, and the primary group that they turn to for that is the pharmaceutical industry. And the business of pharmaceuticals is to make effective, safe products for consumers' health. But I think one of the issues that's brought out in the news frequently, and it's a very valid issue, is ensuring that the science is objective and that the I think I bring up a number of articles that talk about, I think, the Savvy Payer Quiz. There was a research article that basically looked at off-label usage with prescription drugs and how frequent an occurrence that was. And off-label prescribing is basically when a drug has been approved for a specific age group for a specific condition, and it's used outside of that.
Yes.
And there was I can't recall the name of the product. It's probably not best to mention it anyway, but there was an antidepressant that had been approved for adults, but it was being used off-label with adolescents. And the impact that it had with that age group was that it tended to increase impulsivity.
Oh.
And what was occurring was that they were having a higher incidence of suicides with young people. But when they evaluated the drug, one of the things that they found was that it was never indicated for adolescents, but yet it was being used for adolescents. So all of these issues obviously impact consumers, and from the consumer end, they're frequently not familiar with many of these issues. And my sense is, to be a savvy consumer, you really need to be familiar with these issues.
And does your book then help consumers to go through this process?
Yes. The subtitle of the book, which I introduce in the preface of the book, is the book essentially is the Savvy Consumer's Guide to Healthcare. And as I mentioned, if healthcare seems like a foreign country, to most consumers, then the book will give you some of the critical issues to help you navigate healthcare more effectively and make more informed choices regarding your healthcare.
Matt in Cazenovia, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Matt. Thanks for calling.
Hey, I just wanted to make a comment about the cultural influences on health.
Sure.
I spent time in Japan, and something mm-hmm. that's very common there is something called radio taiso or radio exercises.
Uh-huh.
And everyone seems to do it. I did some. I did a little traveling of the country after I was done doing what I went there to do.
Right.
And I spent some time in some railroad stations. But people get together, you know, in parks all around cities in the countryside. They would broadcast this particular music to
right.
actually, that goes along with the exercises. Everyone just gets together and does it.
Yeah.
And that has a huge impact on the health
sure.
Of the populace.
Sure. And I think what you'll find in many of the Asian countries is, you know, obviously Tai Chi, all of the movement exercises. You'll see elderly people, you know, individuals in their 70s and 80s in the parks doing these breathing exercises. And those are obviously very good for your health. And many of those countries have extended longevity beyond what the Americans have.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call, Matt. And Christine, I thank you very much for being with us today. Certainly a pleasure to have you on board, and hopefully we'll have another chance to visit.
I'd love to, and thank you for having me, Larry.
Christine Larson of Lexington, Kentucky, is an adjunct faculty member with the University of Kentucky System. She's completing her doctoral work in evidence-based medicine, and she's the author of the book we've been talking about titled Alternative Medicine. It's published by Greenwood Press, and it's part of a series on health and medical issues today. Pleased to have her with us. And stay with us, too, because we're going to be talking about some hidden health dangers with Dr. Paul Blanc, a professor of medicine, and he has a book out as well. And the book is titled How Everyday Products Make People Sick, Toxins at Home and in the Workplace. And you might be surprised at some of the things that Dr. Blanc wants to talk with us about today, some of those common things that most of us have in our homes that can create problems. So we'll deal with that next, coming up here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.